Critics of the Navy's maritime strategy are all over the federal defense community. One retired officer tells the U.S. Naval Institute the defense community may not understand what the word strategy means anymore. Congressman Randy Forbes has an open letter to the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Jonathan Greenard, asking him to lead an effort to restore strategic planning to the Navy. Barney Rubel is former dean of the Center for Naval Warfare Studies at the U.S. Naval War College, and he thinks those critics are missing an important piece of the strategy puzzle. Barney, thank you for joining me this afternoon. A terrific piece that you've written for War on the Rocks, and we have a link at federalnewsradio.com. It's titled, What Critics of the Navy Strategy Get Wrong, and I wonder what the essence is of what they're getting wrong about it. Thanks for joining me today, Barney.
Happy to be here, Francis. I guess the way to start is that if they're criticizing the documents, that the latest one being the Cooperative Strategy for 21st Century Sea Power, but before that it was the From the Sea series, and before that the vaunted 80s Maritime Strategy. If they're regarding those things as strategy and criticizing them on that basis, then they're wrong, because those things really aren't strategies. They are documents that support one or another kind of institutional strategies the Navy has, but they're not strategies in and of themselves.
You write, the challenge the Navy faces today is how to keep executing the actual maritime strategy with a steadily shrinking force. And I imagine that's exacerbated by the fact that nobody's really sure right now to what level the force will eventually shrink. Is that a fair assumption on my part, Barney?
Yeah, all you have to do is look at the analyses that, for instance, Ron O'Rourke puts out every now and then from the CBO, and you see that despite, you know, aspirational projections of the CNO and various naval officers about, you know, how many ships we're going to have and how we're going to build, the reality is we fall short. And if you look at the more realistic projections, the Navy's heading south to somewhere down around 280, 270 ships, or maybe even less.
I'm seeing more of a conversation, though, than I have seen in the past couple of years around what the capability is and what the inventory should look like from a holistic perspective than just the sheer number. For a long time, that seemed to be where most of the dialogue was, Barney, but that is starting to change. Is that, you, at least in my perception, do you think my perception is correct, and is that a healthy way to look at the way the Navy should be structured in the next 5 to 25 years?
You mean putting more and more capability into fewer and fewer ships, vice a larger number of lesser capable ships?
Well, maybe not even to that level of detail. Maybe just the idea that we are thinking about end capability and what we will be able to do with the ships that make up the capability that we have, rather than the Navy should be X number of ships or it should be Y number of ships.
Well, there's certainly some. There's a point there that, you need to have capability in ships that will perform the mission in view of current threats, future threats, et cetera. But numbers do matter. I mean, and it's not so much the number of ships that the Chinese Navy might have or the Iranians or anybody else. It's the sheer size of the Earth and the speed of ships. If you're going to have a presence somewhere, then you need a certain number of ships. And if you add up all the different places that U.S. policy and strategy requires naval presence, then you have to have numbers of hulls. There's no way around that.
But
there was a CNA tipping point study a few years ago that said, okay, at what point does the U.S. Navy stop being a truly global Navy? And I can't remember the exact number they had, but it wasn't too much less than the 270 or 260 ships.
But how much of that is based on capability, and how much of it is based just on the ability to cover a certain amount of sea, or is that one in the same?
Yeah, our ship that can cover the most amount of sea, I guess, if to either search, influence, et cetera, is the Nimitz and now Ford-class aircraft carriers. But we can only afford a few of those, and there are plenty of other places where that kind of capability represents overkill. Almost anywhere in Africa, many places in the Mediterranean or the Far East, the aircraft carriers is simply overkill, and we're better served by having lesser capable ships for various reasons. So it's not a matter of capability of making up for numbers. You need certain capabilities, but you also need certain numbers.
And striking that balance is what we're talking about. Barney Rubles, former dean of the Center for Naval Warfare Studies at the U.S. Naval War College, and writing under the title, What Critics of the Navy's Strategy Get Wrong, on waronthrocks.com. We have a link to it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Barney, you write, whatever technical and operational fixes the Navy comes up with, like the current optimized fleet response plan, what is needed is a corporate strategy for catalyzing congressional investment in shipbuilding and readiness. In an environment that we're in right now, where sequester as of October 1st will be the law of the land again, is that even possible right now? Or is that issue one for Congress to address, is how do we bring some kind of budget certainty to the Defense Department in the coming several years?
Well, budget certainty has been the brass ring for the DOD. Since I can remember, and I entered right after Vietnam, it's always the swings of budget and uncertainty that bedevil planners and ultimately raise the cost of weapons systems when we go to procure them. So this is nothing new. In terms of sequester, which is new, the automatic cuts have to be covered, at least right now, by the supplementals, OCO, et cetera, which really goes for instead of contingencies for operations and maintenance. But in the sequester era, I don't see any or much of any chance for a budget stability, as it were. And so the DOD is going to have to be opportunistic, and that's just going to drive up the cost of weapon systems.
You write, in a time of U.S. preeminence, rather low global threat levels, and severe budget deficits, the idea of corporate strategy, as you laid it out a moment ago, you call it a tough challenge, to say the least. Is it doable? I mean, I guess anything's doable, but given the landscape that we live in right now, is this something that that you can foresee the Defense Department getting from Congress, or is this something that you foresee them having to figure out on their own?
Well, that's precisely what the Navy, as I understand it, is trying to do right now, is produce some kind of document that lays out the argument for forward presence, that the criticality of naval forward presence to the future interests of the country, maintaining the global system, the security, the global system of commerce and security, that, you know, based on the Bretton Woods Accords that after World War II. If they can make that argument, then and really, this is what they're doing is based on advice of Randy Forbes and some of the other legislators that were at a Naval Institute conference a year ago last December in D.C. The Navy's really taken their advice, and they said, focus on Congress, make the case to us. And so I think that's what the Navy's going to try to do.
Barney,
if they can, maybe some relief will be had.